Esther Nieves, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate you taking some time this morning.
Well, thank you, Gordon. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Can you give us some background on the Community Leadership Network? Tell us what it's all about.
Absolutely. So the Kellogg Foundation, as you know, its home is Michigan, and we've been here over 80 years. One of the things that the foundation has been known for is its commitment to leadership development, and throughout its history, various fellowship programs to engage individuals who are working in particular areas of interest to the foundation. So we've had food fellows engage in good food and agricultural development. We've had health and wellness fellows, individuals engage in work related to the fuel itself and practices that improve an individual or a community's health and well-being. And this iteration of the program is a community leadership network that is intentional about bringing individuals together who focus on vulnerable children. So we're doing this in our U.S. priority places. That would be in Michigan, our home state, in New Mexico, Mississippi, and New Orleans. And we have 24 fellows from 15 states and the District of Columbia who will focus on certainly a commitment that the foundation has to racial equity and racial healing. So we have 120 in total individual fellows who will be part of this inaugural class of the Community Leadership Network Fellowship Program.
Tell us how you chose the particular geographic places of focusing on Michigan, Mississippi, New Mexico, and New Orleans.
Well, you certainly know that we're not going to abandon our home state. This Michigan was an important part of Mr. Kellogg's life. It was where he was born and reared, and his business unfolded. In the last 8 years, about 8 years ago, the foundation really looked at its strategic framework and looked at Mr. Kellogg's vision and what he had told in the past as he unfolded his work in Michigan and his interest in children. And I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, do anything you want with my money as long as it helps the well-being, education, and health of children. And so in the last 8 years, the foundation's trustees and its senior leadership looked at this as its mandate, and we returned in a more intentional way to look at communities in which there were socioeconomic indicators that really were an abysmal example of some of the gaps that children in these priority places, as we call them, struggled through. So we looked at academic performance, we looked at health and wellness, we looked at the economic security of families, and over time, the four places that were prioritized, New Mexico, Mississippi, New Orleans, pre-Katrina, and then post-Katrina, and then certainly Michigan, the conclusion was that, yes, we were going to be intentional about doing work in these places and really trying to change the conditions of vulnerable children, particularly around their health, around their educational access and academic achievement, around access to good food, one of the important parts of Mr. Kellogg's legacy. And then, of course, looking at how we could support financial security for their family so they could all go move forward, not only as a child, but as a family unit to improve their quality of life. So that unfolded over time, and it certainly has been the thrust of what we're going to be doing in the fellowship program.
Can you tell us maybe a little more about these emerging leaders, the 120 of them? What sort of education and training do they have before they sort of embark on this new venture?
Well, diversity has been a key part of our effort to look at this class. And we have really an intergenerational class of individuals that are not only emerging leaders, but we also have some established leaders from many walks of life. We have clergy members, we have school principals, we have tribal leaders, we have community organizers, we even have a newspaper publisher, and in fact, we also have a state senator. Each of them has unique skills and life experiences and bring really various community perspectives to the work of this network. We have been very focused on making sure that this leadership fellowship program create connections between these individuals. So as I said, for example, the senator may not know the youth advocate, but they're really working on some of the common issues to change the conditions of teenagers or young people in schools in New Mexico, as an example. And so we want to be able to connect individuals to each other so that even after the three-year program that they've gone through, and they are able to remain engaged and connected to each other around the critical issue of children and youth and vulnerable families. So that's an important part of this. We have the good fortune of having, for example, in Kalamazoo, one of the fellows from the Michigan class, as we call it, the cohort, is a supervising attorney who's the founder of Immigrant Rights Center, the Michigan Immigrant Rights Center, working with families and working with children and looking at issues related to their civic participation. So we have a healthy cadre of individuals from Michigan who represent urban and rural communities, who are involved in the priority issues of concern to the foundation, but are also of great concern to the future of the state and how we bring people together to address these issues that are certainly solvable and we believe can be addressed through a more collective approach.
And specifically, what aspects of health and well-being are you hoping that these fellows will be able to focus on and find some solutions to?
So, for example, we know that good food for babies, as an example, a breastfeeding, is an important part of the development of a child or an infant. And so there are several fellows, not only in the Michigan cohort, but several individuals who are involved in creating opportunities for mothers and families to have access to healthier food. If they're pregnant, promoting the opportunity to ensure that breastfeeding as a first food for the infant and the child is part of their lifestyle. So we are promoting that. We're promoting baby-friendly hospitals. And what that means is, for example, creating opportunities for hospitals in Michigan and in other parts of the country to have not only opportunity for babies to parents to mothers to be trained to do breastfeeding, but also, for example, a lactation room, other opportunities for the family to feel that the hospital is inviting and welcoming. So we have several activities that are done around developmental learning and hospital friendliness and connection to community. We also have, for example, in a Mississippi and in our New Orleans communities, we have activities that are headed by residents around addressing issues of healthy development of children. So the issue of obesity and diabetes and how to improve your lifestyle through exercise and healthy eating opportunities, addressing the issue of grocery stores and what they are selling and encouraging them to have healthy produce, promoting a healthy lifestyle. That's an all an important part of the kind of work that the foundation has been doing in all of these places. And several of our fellows are engaged in what we call access to good food and addressing food disparities, if you will.
Are there plans for this to be an ongoing initiative?
Well, this is a six-year pilot that the foundation's trustees approved, and so we expect to have three classes at the end of the day. We'll have 360 individuals that went through the program, but I anticipate that we're going to have a terrific amount of outcomes from this program and that we will see excitement generated in the community because individuals, we are intentional again about having networks of individuals actively engaged beyond our time. So I expect that while it is a six-year pilot, we will be able to show something, some outcomes, some concrete results that will excite our board. So I'm hopeful that they will consider, again, the possibility of continuing the program.
One last thing. You mentioned the access to healthy food. I'm wondering if that is a relatively new emphasis for nonprofit groups who seem to hear more about it, those of us who aren't, you know, there in the day-to-day work of this. Is this something that has come onto the radar screen of groups like the Kellogg Foundation, perhaps more so in the last few years?
Well, you know, Gordon, the foundation has always had an interest in healthy food. Mr. Kellogg, obviously, with the discovery of the flake and his company, was already engaged in healthy lifestyle and really wanted to promote that, not just as one of his spiritual values, but certainly as one of his own intents as the founder of a cereal company. So I'm not sure that it's a new thing for us. We maybe have looked at it in different ways. So we supported farmers years ago in the South, and we have done agricultural development support throughout the world and certainly in the U.S. But I think we have a couple of external forces that are at play here. And number one, we have, I think one of the most visible activities is Mrs. Obama's effort to improve the health of children and promoting a healthy lifestyle through her own initiative. But we also have had indicators that show that our children are increasingly sluggish and have limited physical mobility because they're not exercising as much. And we've seen indicators of diabetes and obesity and all the kinds of things that are of concern and have been of concern to us. But we've seen this more increasingly so with children. So while I think the public has become much more cognizant of this, for the Kellogg Foundation, this has been a staple of our work in the past and certainly remains a staple of the work that we want to do around food, health, and well-being for a very long time.
Esther Nieves, thank you very much for your time.
Well, I very much appreciate your interest, Gordon. Thank you so much.